Hi, this is Dark Journalist. Today I have a special episode for you with Emmy Award-winning investigative reporter Linda Moulton Howe. Now, Linda recently did some deep research on an unusual archaeological site in Turkey called Göbekli Tepe and produced the DVD documentary 10,000 BC, Göbekli Tepe and Ancient Stone Circles, ET Terraforming. Linda shows us that with this enigmatic archaeological site being dated back to 10,000 BC, we need to rediscover and reassess our true history and the ET connection to our past and future. Now, if Linda's work wasn't controversial enough already, she's tied this ancient site to what she refers to as ET self-activating software, which is embedded throughout sacred architecture around the globe. Are we being activated now to raise our consciousness at this crucial time? Here we go. Investigative reporter Linda Moulton Howe, Ancient Alien Technology and Göbekli Tepe.
Self-activating software means that patterns can be imprinted on the surfaces of anything with alien technology in certain fields. And that once the patterns are there, the machines never need any organic intelligence again. There was something about the Göbekli Tepe site that was in that category of unknowable, untouchable, unthinkable.
You know, when we look at an ancient marvel like Göbekli Tepe and we realize that its construction took place over 12,000 years ago, it's a great reminder that our modern world is only now beginning to grasp some of the real mysteries of our antediluvian past. Are we the heirs to a much greater story of humanity than what we've been shown? Why has the presence of off-world visitors been left out of our history? And finally, are we witnessing a major paradigm shift between the past and the future? Let's go ask Linda Moulton Howe.
Dark journalists will go there. The deepest issues, the hardest stories, the biggest secrets. The truth is never easy. With top guests, like former Assistant Housing Secretary Catherine Austin Fitz.
Catherine, who is really behind this media censorship?
And internet feeds go through satellites. Who controls the satellites? It's the Pentagon.
Legendary investigator Graham Hancock.
Graham, this cataclysm must have destroyed an advanced culture in our ancient past.
It truly was an extinction-level event. It was accompanied by massive animal extinctions. It was accompanied by huge and unexplained sea level rises, and then a sudden plunge of global temperatures.
Best-selling author Jim Mars.
Jim, don't these elite corporate owners need us around to buy their GMO food? Why would they want to depopulate?
Because they are eugenicists and they believe that they need to purify the human race. And if that sounds like the Nazis, that's exactly what it is.
Coast to Coast AM investigative reporter Linda Moulton Howe.
Linda, how are we going to scale that wall of UFO secrecy?
Humans themselves are bypassing, are beginning to dismiss all of the policies of denial and lies.
Dark journalists will go there. Visit darkjournalist.com and subscribe now for a special spring discount available for just $39 for one full year. You'll not only receive access to the complete audio archives to stream or download at your convenience, you'll also get exclusive subscriber-only content and Dark Journalist event discounts. Sign up for our free newsletter to stay updated on the latest shows. Dark Journalist, let's get the real story in 2016.
You know, we need dark journalists, so just keep doing what you're doing.
Linda, it's great having you back on the show, and I'm really excited to go over this fascinating mystery of the ancient site of Göbekli Tepe with you. It's interesting to me that you bring this element that no one else is talking about, and that is the alien connection to this enigma, and your research on ET self-activating software being at the root of some of these ancient sites that are totally incredible. And that, again, is very original on your part. Now, I know that you've actually been to the site while doing your research on it there. So how did you become interested in it in the first place? And how has your perspective grown since you've been doing research on this ancient puzzle?
I have done in the last 5 or 6 years, it's a 2-hour presentation I've done at conferences where I go into this in great detail. And I do have a DVD out now that I call 10,000 BC Göbekli Tepe Self-Activating ET Technology - Terraforming ? And that DVD, for me, it's one of the most interesting projects I've ever done. In an hour, I have tried to pack the relationships between ancient discoveries that are like Göbekli Tepe. Every archaeologist who has been with anything having to do with Göbekli Tepe is hard pressed to explain it.
Right, right. And can you tell us why Göbekli Tepe is such a mystery and such an anomaly in the archaeological record?
You're going back 12,000 years. 10,000 BC is 12,000 years ago. All of this carbon dating, meticulously done by Klaus Schmidt, the German archaeologist who, God bless him, wherever he is, he died last year, completely suspected swimming in a swimming pool in Berlin in between his digs at Göbekli Tepe.
Oh, it's a great loss.
He had done very careful carbon dating. And why was he reluctant? He didn't make any of this public until 2010. Because he knew that 12,000 years ago, 10,000 BC, that he was just going to have rocks thrown at him. Because why? Because we're living on a planet with a concocted history that says that 5,000 years ago in a place called Mesopotamia, where we have nothing but war today, that there were, that civilization just sprang out of gatherers and with a ability to carve in stone and do language and math, and it just popped up into Mesopotamia, and that there were the Sumerian gods, quote unquote, that the roly-poly Sumerian humans had a very intimidating relationship with, that the Sumerian gods were considered to be mean and capricious, and those are coming from the words of archaeologists like Budge and Harriet Crawford and others who studied Iran, Iraq.
Right.
Long before this horrible political devastation that we're living with now in the 21st century. And that if we had textbooks in universities around this world for at least two or three centuries that said human civilization began in Mesopotamia,
that's the official position.
A line was drawn in the mental consciousness of humanity. This is it. We were standing up apes, and suddenly we had full-blown civilization 5,000 years ago. And everybody bought it.
Huh.
I don't know why. Göbekli Tepe is not the only big breakthrough, but it is a huge one because it's there physical. And when you are there and you are in the presence of those 19-foot tall limestone pillars that are elegantly, elegantly constructed, that have the either carved in or a 3D relief on the outside of some of the creatures.
It is visually epic and really conjures up some very unusual imagery. Now, can you tell me what kind of creatures are depicted there?
Not all the creatures are identifiable. They're very confusing. And for some reason, human forms buried down below some of the pillars. And one of the most extraordinary, two of the most extraordinary, the totem that I've talked about that had a predator's face at the top comes down. This is a body, this is a body, this is a body, and then you get to the bottom. And in between, the face of the upper predator has been blasted away, knocked away, destroyed. The next is a very odd-looking arms and maybe a bit of a torso. And then the next one is like arms and a torso, as if it's depicting three. And then at the bottom, it is what appears to be a human lower body with a pubis that is giving birth to what then looks very clearly like a human baby. Mm-hmm. This is interpretive. This is clear. And that totem, 6 foot, 3 inches tall, that they found that only 3 years ago in the process of going down carefully, tiny layer by tiny layer, on this hillside where, Daniel, there are at least, because you have to count the exposed pillars, there are at least 200 to 300 more underground.
Wow.
Deep ground penetrating radar. They know that this pot-bellied hill, that's what Göbekli Tepe means in Turkish.
Right.
That the pot-bellied hill, they've only got a tiny 5% of it.
So they know that the rest of it is there. They just haven't dug it up yet. Amazing.
And these big pillars, 5, 10, 15 tons, are in carefully placed rings that you can see the rings in the deep ground penetrating radar. You can see the rings where they have excavated. That means this was a hugely intelligently mathematically constructed hilltop of rings of pillars made out of limestone all over the top of this hill. And that many in rings with all of these carvings, that there would be this totem of whatever they are giving birth to what looks like a human baby. And then when you go to another part of the Urfa Museum, there is what they call the Urfa Man.
Yeah.
Taken right out of the excavation of the discovery of all of these ringed pillars. And it is inside of a glass case, so you can't touch it, which is, thank God they have done that.
Definitely.
It is such a sophisticated looking sculpture. One man standing next to you, golly, that could be in a museum in New York. It's that good. But what is it depicting? The head has no hair. What must have been a massive beaked nose has been broken off. So that means you have a flat broken off, but you can imagine the nose that was there. When you come below where the nose was off, it's totally sculpted. Nothing is cracked. Nothing is broken. This was made this way. This is totally flat surface. No lips, no lines.
No mouth.
No, it's just curved in as if to represent a reality, but it is the eyes. The eyes were made out of a black crystal, like onyx, but they're cubed so that the eye itself, they're crystal, they're black, they're intense, and they have all of, like, looking at three-dimensional pixels. That's the impression coming out of these eyes. And then when you get below this strange non-mouth, which immediately all of us there thought of, God, it's like they're a depiction of somebody who they only could communicate telepathically, or they were never allowed to communicate.
So they're kind of silent telepathic masters of some kind. What were the other features that you noticed on it?
The neck comes down. And this is 12,000 years old. It has a double perfect V, meaning if you took stitching here and stitching here, it is just like mine, but it's the V that we all saw on Star Trek.
That is bizarre.
Had the same reaction.
It's such modern, futuristic looking clothing.
Yes. And came down to not far below this Earth man's waist. It's truncated, and then it's sitting on what appears to be like about probably 8 to 10 inches wide, and it comes down about this far, probably 12 inches. Just like if you were cutting paper in your paper doll and you wanted to have a way to stand it up. So this was made, this Urfa man, in all of his mystery, was made to be put into the ground where the rings of the limestone pillars.
Huh, that's amazing.
So if this is other, to use the NASA JPL word, if this is other, what was the intent? Why was all of this energy and construction put on that hill in Turkey, not very far from where the Euphrates and comes down to meet with the Tigris that is so historically wound in our minds with the big water systems that so many populations long ago used? And the man who had gone to Yale has a PhD in geology.
And this would be Robert Schock, the geologist who caused a firestorm of interest by revealing the weathering pattern that was on the Sphinx actually suggested it was built in 10,000 BC, not 2,000 BC.
He was looking at all of this, and his words the morning that we were there have always stayed with me. He said, all of these big, tall limestone pillars, they look like tuning forks.
Oh, that's a great observation.
And I hadn't thought that. But when he said tuning forks, I immediately understood. And he said, maybe this entire construction was made to resonate with frequencies to something above.
That's interesting.
Well, what could be above on the top of a hill?
Yeah, well, my first thought would be it's something hovering in the air, I would imagine. Now, how did you feel when you were looking at some of these sculptures, like Urfa Man, and when you were at Göbekli Tepe? I know you did remarkable technical analysis when you were there, but what kind of impressions did you get?
Well, I've traveled all over the planet. I've been both hemispheres. One of my favorite things always has been to go someplace that I have never been before with no itinerary, just to feel my way through it. That is to me the greatest pleasure. And in doing that in so many places, I always am expecting to get that feel from an environment that helps me understand what it is. There's just no other way to put it. I experienced this in Machu Picchu.
I see.
Sort of being drawn to and trying to understand and coming to some sort of intuitive sense of all kinds of things in Machu Picchu.
Mm-hmm.
But standing inside of the Göbekli Tepe archaeology amid all of these tall limestone pillars and all of the high strangeness of it, what I remember was I couldn't feel anything.
Huh, isn't that odd?
And that not feeling anything was, this is alien. This is alien in the classic English sense of the word, not knowing, not understanding. I could not get anything. This was not anything that I could relate to, resonate with, get any sense of, didn't know what it did. That's what I mean. That was my first biggest surprise.
I can appreciate that.
And that doesn't prove anything about who built it. But a Smithsonian reporter had been there the year before and had written an article that I read, and that he said that there was something about the Göbekli Tepe site that was in that category of unknowable, untouchable, unthinkable, incomprehensible. And he used a string of words. And I think that most people who have been there, it's not roly-poly human.
It really doesn't seem like it.
That sets it apart. Egypt has that impact on you for the first time. I remember thinking, humans, how did humans do this?
Yeah, well, there's a great mystery there because it's so extraordinary.
Göbekli Tepe is even more. Well, coming back to where we started in this whole issue of we're on a planet that if in fact it has been used and terraformed and harvested by other intelligences, that would certainly be in keeping with what Michio Kaku has been writing about now for a long time, that looking out into the universe, it is only logical to him, a quantum physicist, that we're in a 13.9 billion light year old universe. That's plenty of time for the galaxies to have formed. We know that they're seeing galaxies all the way back to not very long after what is supposed to have been the beginning. And that he divides the universe into like four sections. We'd be in the youngest.
Mm-hmm.
So our ability to have even understanding of anything in the other three quadrants of this universe, if you divide them into equal ages, is impossible. And then the idea that intelligence that can make self-activating software, it's the symbols, it's very complicated. Seeing my DVD.
Well, this is probably a good point to have you explain what ET self-activating software is, since we seem to be looking at it in this Göbekli Tepe site.
Self-activating software means that patterns can be imprinted on the surfaces of anything with alien technology in certain fields. And that once the patterns are there, the machines never need any organic intelligence again.
Uh-huh.
That's why it's called self-activating software.
This is a fantastic and very descriptive term, I think. So let's go into this a little bit deeper. Let's take this ancient site, Göbekli Tepe. Now, you mentioned it was actually buried, which is unusual for the kind of ancient site that it is. So they certainly didn't want it to be discovered or to age in an epic fashion out there in the open like the Sphinx.
Not according to Klaus Schmidt. It's very complicated and weird.
Mm-hmm.
There are things called soil compression tests. And when he started the archaeology, which is slowly taking off the soil down to where you find something, and then you net and grid so that you've got numbers and locations to where it is that you're digging, and what you find is always coming up in a numerical XYZ axis three-dimensionally, so you know exactly where something was, and when you do the carbon dating, you know exactly how deep, how far from wherever your grid pattern is. This is all very, very important.
Right.
And that in the process of doing that, Klaus Schmidt began to realize that the soil, let's say soil from the surface where they started, going down 20 feet, was a completely different compression than the soil that they encountered below 20 feet. And when they go to physicists who study soil, because you have to do that to build dams, you have to do that to build big buildings, soil compression is vital.
Sure.
So there are people who specialize in soil compression. They applied knowledge and they came to the conclusion that all of the 300 and some stones in the rings had all been built at one time 12,000 years ago. Then 1,000 years later, again, based on soil compression, carbon dating, because you have to think of this you always have to think of archaeological digs that are done correctly.
Okay.
XYZ is always at work. You have to keep in your mind that you are doing something that's in a three-dimensional world. So if they find a difference at 20 feet, what happened then in the next 20 feet? It isn't just the inch that you're standing on. It's the whole hillside. And then you start getting three-dimensional impressions from all kinds of other tests. And they concluded that 1,000 years, 11,000 years ago, after it had originally been constructed, something, someone's filled the entire hillside, 30 acres, all these stones back up with soil.
All right, I'm with you.
Now, the very concept of doing this has defied logic that 11,000 years ago that humans were going to be able to put enough soil over 30 acres of 19-foot tall ring pillars and do it so that the soil itself would be just like somebody took a sifter and put this soil up over it. It was so sort of perfect. That is where geologists like Schock and others say, whatever happened here, we don't understand.
It is definitely perplexing and seems to break all the traditional rules. Now, are there other studies that have been done out there that have found mysterious anomalies in connection with the Göbekli Tepe site?
There's another huge body of scientific evidence that has been building over the last decade coming from the Tempe University in Arizona. Mm-hmm. There are physicists there who have been going back in time looking at why are there these huge carbon mats in North America and Canada. When they do the archaeological dig to these carbon mats, and they're like mats, they may be a quarter to a half inch or bigger, and they're massive, and they're found always at the same layer that is approximately in that 11,000 year time. And then you combine that with all the Siberian tigers and the big mastodons and the creatures that were roaming North America and around 11,000 years ago, they were annihilated. There were 31 some species that were completely annihilated around 11,000 years ago by an event that appeared to happen only on the North American side of Earth.
Huh.
And the black mat investigation leads to the discovery of nanodiamonds, millions of nanodiamonds. That's carbon. It can only be turned into a diamond by a specific intense pressure and heat. That means that North America, huge swaths, experienced something that came in with such pressure and such heat that it created millions of nanodiamonds in what are called these black mats that are down to a certain level that in carbon dating ends up about 11,000 years ago.
That's interesting.
So now you have an event in which physical data keeps building up on the North American side, going across, let's go over the North Pole. Now we're in the Mediterranean, where at Göbekli Tepe is not on the Mediterranean. It's actually 6 miles from the Syrian border. But when you look at a map and you look at Syria today and you look at the Syrian-Turkey border and here's the Mediterranean, we're not talking huge distances.
Okay.
Then on top of all of this was the last ice age. Reached its peak 18,000 years ago.
Yes.
It reached its peak. But even at the peak of the last ice age, there was no ice anywhere around the Mediterranean. The ice on the North American continent was largely up above what we call the U.S.-Canadian border today. That meant that the Mediterranean, Göbekli Tepe, they were dry. Very cold, but they were dry. 12,000 years ago is when the ice age was letting go. Rapid heating was occurring on Earth. This gets built 2.5 times earlier than anything in Mesopotamia.
Mm-hmm.
We're comparing 12,000 to 5,000. And that whatever built it may have had knowledge of what was coming in to the other side of the earth and wanted this covered and preserved, even though it would not get a direct hit.
I see.
What none of us know is the scientists think that there was a lot of atmospheric fire, chaos, when whatever came into North America caused, because carbon is, that happens because of burning.
Right, right.
Diamonds only happen with high heat. So whatever came into North America was so devastating that it could take out 31, 33 species of animals. Well, over the pole in the Mediterranean, that atmospheric fallout and fires and carbon, it's amazing. And that's why they're actually looking. They think there should be carbon mats in other parts of the world as well, not just North America, because the indication is the atmosphere of our planet 11,000 years ago was filled with something that caused a lot of carbon fallout. But they haven't, to my knowledge, yet found it. But if you're dealing with other intelligence that might have known what was coming in, large comet, large meteorite, couldn't be stopped, they protected. That's the hypothesis. Something had the ability to suddenly put all of Göbekli Tepe under soil. And not a single person, to our knowledge, on this planet knew anything about Göbekli Tepe until some herdsmen reported to locals in Urfa, San Lurfa today. They have found something, and that set in motion the communication to Klaus Schmidt in Berlin at the German Museum. And in 1993, he went there, and by 1994, that was the first beginning of serious archaeology.
That is so fascinating that we're able to look upon this 12,000-year-old mystery, which is largely intact, and meet eyes with this message from our ancient past. Now, what I'm wondering is if you believe that there's a reason why we are discovering it now. You know, is the timing part of the ET self-activating software? Is it being activated?
In the big box of the universe, maybe there are no accidents. But from a human point of view, it is as if what has come out of Göbekli Tepe, the biggest bottom line, civilization able to work with symbols and carve three-dimensionally and cover a hill with 19-foot-tall limestone in rings with sophisticated totems and sculptures did not begin 5,000 years ago in Mesopotamia.
Right.
And that some of the symbols in 12,000-year-old Göbekli Tepe, like the Shen in Egypt, they are in Göbekli first, as if Egypt and whatever built Egypt is an echo of some of the things that are in Göbekli Tepe.
Oh, isn't that something?
And if we find that between 12,000 and 5, that's 7,000 years gap. 7,000 years gap.
That's huge.
And Göbekli was covered. Göbekli Tepe was covered 1,000 years after. So let's say even bring it down to 6,000 years. And you're finding symbols like the Shen, which is like the big bird that holds the ring and the rod that was so important to Egypt, was already carved in stone in Göbekli Tepe long before, 7,000 years before Egypt. And then, to me, the next interesting question is, okay, what if the makers, I'm not talking about the human slaves, I'm not talking about the roly-poly humans living in and around Mesopotamia. I'm talking about those in control who conceived these grand terraforming schemes. What if they were one in the same minds doing two different timeline periods? Göbekli Tepe, Egypt, Samaria. Maybe there's a link there.
Well, it would be looking at this kind of master group's work in different time periods and different locations. Although, as we know, things just keep getting older as the research and the technology progresses. So, you know, some of the work that, say, Graham Hancock did with Robert Schoch, which we mentioned earlier about the dating of the Sphinx back to 10,000 BC, fits exactly with the Göbekli Tepe dating. So, you know, we're seeing a link there. And I'll also mention here that Edgar Cayce's psychic work, which indicated that the Sphinx and the pyramid were built in 10,500 BC. And of course, he also alluded to a hidden pyramid with a hall of records in it that was yet to be discovered. So what we can say with the discovery of Göbekli Tepe and its scientific dating back to 12,000 years ago is that the traditional archaeological picture of the development of culture and civilization is wrong, you know, since their model dates us only back to Sumeria as the cradle of civilization in 5,000 BC. So they're missing at least 5,000 years there, just for starters.
It means that an artificial line was drawn in the sand academically that civilization began 5,000 years ago. That is what is wrong.
And this is challenging because we've had a few centuries of this kind of thinking, and the gatekeepers in academic circles around archaeology don't want to go back and say, well, our version of the past was in error, because that opens up a whole lot of different issues that they don't want to touch.
And we all have been exposed to it. Those of us who evolved in the 20th century and crossed into the 21st, we were all taught that human civilization began 5,000 years ago in Mesopotamia.
Right.
That is wrong.
Exactly. So if it's wrong, why aren't we hearing more about this new model of history that Göbekli Tepe is creating?
You don't hear much now, unfortunately, about Göbekli Tepe, I think because Dr. Klaus Schmidt died in the summer of 2000.
Oh.
So unexpectedly, and I really, there's been a lot of questions, who's going to carry on his work? With the meticulous, he was meticulous, he was greatly respected, which solidifies that what Klaus Schmidt reported is accepted archaeologically. And it then remains this huge mystery because it's completely outside of what had been accepted academically.
Well, that is just fascinating, and I want to give you some credit here for raising the profile of Göbekli Tepe in your work. Interestingly enough, Göbekli Tepe has been featured on the cover of National Geographic. And when I saw that a couple of years ago, I said to myself, what's going to happen now? You know, archaeology is going to have to redate everything. And this validates the work of Robert Schoch and Graham Hancock and others who showed that there was a civilization in Egypt in 10,000 BC. And recall they were, attacked by mainstream archaeologists at the time who said, you can't say that there's no culture that far back. Well, now that cultural link has been found, and there should be headlines redating all of this and changing models, etc. But mainstream archaeology hasn't done anything, and the media doesn't say anything about it. So where does that leave us?
This is why there's an adage among reporters, silence is a strong yes.
Oh, that's great.
Sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, when you think of all the work that you've done, you're seeing the footprint of some other intelligence walking through the centuries and different ages of humanity. You know, you're on the Ancient Aliens show and you deal with this topic on a regular basis. So when you came out with the research on self-activating software, I was really intrigued because I know that you understand something about this process, that this stuff operates on its own once it's activated. So now, you know, we've only recently rediscovered Göbekli Tepe after 12,000 years. And now that we've uncovered it, if it is ET self-activating software, it's doing its job again. It's activated.
Well, you're raising a really good point that I raised in my DVD.
Mm-hmm.
If circles are part of the self-activating software, then could it be that when circles in stone, mounds in circles all over this planet were built long ago, that it was self-activating software, something that would be incomprehensible to humans, and that even the crop formations themselves could be a self-activating software put down in the skin of the earth in patterns over years, decades, centuries. Humans marvel at them, dismiss them, hoaxers imitate them, but the pattern itself is doing its work.
Right.
And that occurred to me long ago at a Barbary Castle pattern in 2008 when an astrophysicist called me and said, Linda, I've discovered pi out to 9 places in this crop formation that you have at Earth Files. And that set in motion this fascinating dialogue of seeing how a horizontal surface could be made to represent 3.14 out to 9 decimals. And pi is infinite, never repeating. It goes on, it's a rational number, and it goes on forever.
Right.
The very fact that the pi up to 9 decimal places could be put on a horizontal in barley, and that the designators were 90-degree angles in curving lines, and you would have to superimpose 360 degrees on the circle, then you could take the smallest circle that had the 90 degrees truncating it and say, all right, I'm going to take that distance in the degrees, and I'm going to divide the circle and see what happens if I put those degrees down. That is what the astrophysicist did, and that's how he found precisely 3.14 out 9 decimal points. And guess where? 90 degree angles to a curve. A curve. And then you put a 90 degree, and this is curving around, and you have another 90 degree. You're measuring what are the degrees between this 90 degree and this 90 degree.
Mm-hmm.
And this can go all the way over to here. Where there's a 90 degree. It can go almost all the way around, but there have to be demarcation points if you grasp that you're getting an angle that is one, and that's your one, and everything else becomes perfect 3.14 out 9 decimal points, because the 90 degree intersections are what are defining the length of the arcs that equal 3.14. And in the process of my working with him, and that was 2008, what did I have a few months before was the Isaac download as a whistleblower of the self-activating software defined as extraterrestrial that he released as a whistleblower to me and to Coast to Coast. And that one night in 2008, after Barbary Castle, it hit me. I'm looking at the 90-degree demarcations that are in the Isaac self-activating material. And I ran and got put up on the screen, and there it is.
Wow.
1 year or whatever that time was before June, and then it would have been July. So, yeah, it was a year apart. When you look at the complex diagrams that he released as self-activating extraterrestrial software for commercial applications research of extraterrestrial technology, here is exactly the same pattern that is in the Harley pattern of 2008, a year later, that was pi 3.14 to 9 decimal points. And only an astrophysicist who had built telescopes, that's what his career was, he built telescopes. Every day of his life, he was dealing with 3.14.
Right.
That is, when you're dealing with circular construction, you are working with pi.
That's so interesting. And this is the Isaac material, which you received from a whistleblower who was an engineer concerning these dragonfly drones that were being seen everywhere. And he attributed them to a secret program called CARET, which is C-A-R-E-T, that involved the reverse engineering of this ET technology. And what you're saying here is that it ties in with some of the sacred geometry and patterns that you're observing. So we're going to go deeply into how these all fit together when we come back for the last round with investigative reporter Linda Moulton Howe. Stay with us.
Go deeper with Dark Journalist. Subscribe now and you'll have access to the complete audio archives to download or stream at your convenience. Receive advanced updates and discounts on Dark Journalist events. Enjoy exclusive subscriber-only content. Go deeper with Dark Journalist. Visit darkjournalist.com and subscribe now for a special spring discount available for just $39 for one full year. Dark Journalist, the truth is never easy.
As they were sitting there filming, a little saucer came from, a saucer came flying over their heads, put down three little landing gear and landed right out on the dry lake bed. And they picked up their cameras and started over toward it, filming as they went. And when they got in fairly close to it, it lifted up, put the gear back in the wheel wells, tipped up, and took off at a great rate of speed.
Dark Journalist will go there.
Are we witnessing a major paradigm shift?
Hidden technology.
So in other words, the possibility exists that you have here a machine that is manipulating magnetic fields on a planetary scale that has nothing to do with particle physics.
The black budget.
But there's no such thing as getting away from the corruption because it is literally, it is now integrated into every economy in the globe.
Geoengineering.
I'm talking about right down to the DNA level. Imagine that you have now put microprocessors and sensors along with everything else into every human body, every animal body.
For more deep interviews, special reports, and documentaries, visit darkjournalist.com today. Dark Journalist, the truth is never easy.
And we are back. This is Dark Journalist, and I'm speaking with legendary UFO investigator and Coast to Coast AM reporter Linda Moulton Howe. Now, Linda's been walking us through some amazing history with the mysterious ancient stone circle site, Göbekli Tepe, in Turkey, that is transforming what we know about our human past. And it is strongly suggested that an ET presence has embedded many of these sacred ancient structures with a kind of software technology pattern to activate something in our own consciousness. Now, Linda, we left off where you were making these connections between some of the crop circle patterns and the strange story of the dragonfly drones. Now, do you remember how you felt when you had that realization that they had something in common?
Working backwards for me, it was like, wow, that was where I had the first idea. If this is self-activating software, then the barley pattern must be self-activating.
Yes.
And what is it self-activating? What would patterns around this planet, going back for at least to the 1970s in Warminster in England, that's when they were first really talked about. So the 1970s, so going back into 50, 40 years ago, what would have been in these patterns that started being placed around the planet in two hemispheres that may have been doing something all of these decades that none of us understand, but could be the result of a very advanced intelligence using self-activating software in stone, in cereal crops, in sand. And that brings up, I did, this goes back about 6 years ago, I think it was. There are Australians working with scientists in the United States. Because of all the political problems of getting into Iran and Iraq and Syria and that whole region of the world, an Australian said, let's try using satellites to go into these parts of the world that we want to look at now because the camera is so good and see if we can discover something. And to their shock and amazement, they found that in Syria, Lebanon, Saudi Arabia, that area, that there were more than 2,000, they lost the ability to count, more than 2,000 very odd, strange circular patterns, some of them extremely intricate, in lava rock. If you go back quite a ways in geological time, that whole region was covered with lava from eruptions.
Mm-hmm.
So the surfaces where the Bedouins and our camp, it's lava. And it can be carved into, or again, if dirt settles in, you've got a contrast in color. You have the dark under and you have the dust surface. And so here they discovered and did not know until this satellite study that there were these thousands of patterns. And nobody knows why, but they are all in those specific regions. And when the scientists tried to work with people on the ground to go to the Bedouins and say, do you know anything about these patterns? The Bedouins didn't even know they were there.
Wow, that's amazing. And it's another example of how the technology of satellites and sonar could really change all of the dating of the former cultures that were there in ancient times. And we'd find out that our history of civilization goes back much farther than we've been told. Interesting also that they can only be seen from above. Now, this reminds me of the Nazca lines, which can only be seen from the air. And yet, when you get up there and look at them, it becomes obvious that there's some kind of a message embedded in them. Now, I'm curious what your impressions of the Nazca lines are there in the desert of southern Peru.
Back in the 80s, I spent a month in Peru. And one of the things that I most wanted to do was to fly over the Nazca lines. So I went with a pilot, and it was a Piper Cub, so we could get down very low and slow.
Uh-huh.
And I told him, I said, I really want to be able to get tight close-ups on what these look like as close to the ground as possible. He said, well, then we're going to first go to what is called the 6 mile long runway. It's the one you see in photos. It's a wider at one end and it goes for 6 miles.
Wow.
Triangle. And that when they've done laser studies on it, it is off only like millimeters in terms of perfection as a 6 mile long triangle. So we came at the wide end and went down the whole runway. And he settled the plane down. I have the photos. I found them someplace the other day. You see that here is the surface where people would be walking. And this part, it's like a giant pressed that triangle into the ground. We were trying to estimate, talking about it in the, was it 8 inches, 12 inches? So imagine 6 mile long triangle evenly pressed into the surface of the earth, about 12 inches. What can do that?
Yeah.
And have 21st century measurements in lasers that show that from 6 miles, it's so perfectly there that it's off only millimeters.
That is fascinating.
And why? That means that all of the original historic patterns are pressed in. This isn't piled. These aren't not rocks. These are all pressed in to the Nazca Plains.
That's pretty wild.
I think a lot of people don't understand that.
How did the symbols there on the Nazca Plains strike you? You know, the spider, the monkey, and this kind of waving ET-style character. They're kind of magical symbols, but what did they seem like to you?
Confusing, but when I went to Göbekli Tepe, Robert Schock and I and others talked about that exact question. Strange creatures impressed in the lines of Nazca in Peru, across the world at Göbekli Tepe, strange creatures carved or 3D raised on those pillars, the structures, the idea that you have things that people don't even recognize as current earth creatures.
Mm-hmm.
Is it the same intelligence? Why totems? Why is it that the Northwest of North America are the ones that have built all those big totems? And here was this totem with this strange depiction of something, something, something in the birth of a human baby. Why is it in totem form?
Yes, there's that strange symbolism again, popping up in different cultures at completely different epochs. And somehow there's this connection. And it reminds me of the Brookings Institute report where in the early 60s they were tasked with studying what impact the discovery of ET life would have on our culture here. And how would we respond to the reality that there are other races out there? What kind of an impact would it have? And one of the likely scenarios that they floated out there was that we would probably first discover the ruins in our solar system on some planet of an earlier culture, the remnants of a culture that once existed instead of an active off-world civilization making contact with us now. So here we are in an era where we're not only finding out about our ancient past down here, we may also be discovering, even if it's part of a covert project at this point, which the public isn't being shown, an ancient past here in our solar system. Now, if we were to find ruins on the moon, or on a planet like Mars, and as I said, we most likely already have. But I want to ask you this question. You know, do you think that these planets hold archaeological ruins? And if they do, are they the same type of self-activating software which we've been discussing here?
You could say that it is a logical conclusion. I mean, I will not be surprised if that is what is finally confirmed.
Right.
I think it is so important in this age where we have so much confusion and really a lot of falseness on the web and having to separate out the wheat from the chaff.
Yeah.
Trying to talk as much on what is known and say, you can speculate all day long that if the universe is a universe that's 13.9 billion light years old, then to me, the logical, but we don't have proof, the logical conclusion is that there's other life forms in this universe.
Definitely.
It would be the height of incomprehensibility if we were in a universe alone. That is not logical. So we're in that strange turning of a concocted planetary, we'll call this the mythology, that we're alone in the universe. The truth has always been that other intelligences are there and that there's terraforming going on, probably on millions of planets for various reasons. And in that context of what seems like logic, then the idea that there would be markers, beacons, residue in any solar system where there were things that could be interacted with, I just say that's logical, that I would be surprised if we didn't find it.
Absolutely. And we may discover that so much of the space secrecy that we're witnessing is largely because there are large-scale ruins of older civilizations out there on some of these planets. Linda, just amazing work. And the DVD is 10,000 BC, Göbekli Tepe and Ancient Stone Circles. And ET terraforming is the question that you ask at the end of the title there. Just amazing. This is available at earthfiles.com. And I have to ask you before we end here, how did you feel making this documentary on Göbekli Tepe?
When I watched it doing it, was this reinforcement. It's all beginning to come into a completely different clarity, a new focus. This is much closer to the truth than civilization began 5,000 years ago. And there is something for me that's exhilarating about feeling that I'm actually seeing pieces of real truth on this planet. And I guess that's why I do the work that I do.
Well, it's just amazing work, from your Coast to Coast AM reports to your segments on ancient aliens and your influential books. Just really powerful, life-changing material. Thanks so much for coming on the show for this special exploration of Göbekli Tepe. And remember, everyone, that part two of our episode on a UFO breakthrough in 2016 in the Cape Girardeau case is coming up next week. So it's a great time to subscribe to Dark Journalist to get special episodes like this one and support this important work. We appreciate it. Linda, it's really great having you on the show, and we'll talk soon.
Hope so. I really do.
Me too.
Thank you, Dave.
Thank you. It's great to see you.
Thank you for joining me for this fascinating episode with investigative reporter Linda Moulton Howe on ancient alien technology in Göbekli Tepe. You can find more deep interviews, special reports, and documentaries at www.darkjournalist.com. You can also subscribe here to our YouTube channel to receive the latest videos. See you soon.